Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Ryan Dobson, here with Luann Crane. And Luann, you well know, raising children is one of the hardest things a parent will ever do.
As do you, Ryan.
I do.
And yet, in the middle of that, my four children hold the most tender places in my heart, Doctor. I know you know what I mean by that.
Well, that's absolutely true. In fact, I've devoted a good part of my professional life to kids, beginning when I was a public school teacher. I was 24 years of age.
It would have been fun to have you for a teacher.
you know what? I loved it. I have never done anything I enjoyed more than teaching those sixth graders. I fell in love with them. I missed them on a weekend, which Shirley never understood. But I just love kids, and especially in that context. And then I went on to junior high and there to high school. And then after I finished my formal training, I moved into academia as a professor of pediatrics at a children's hospital and the Department of Pediatrics in a medical school. And from there, I started the ministry to families back in 1977. And, of course, I was reaching out to mothers and fathers and children. So most of my books have been focused on children and their welfare, and that's where my heart lies. And that's what brings us to this program today. And we're going to return to that first love with the help of three men who also love children. Their hearts ache for boys and girls who have no fathers or some who have no mothers. And it's a shame that in this country, 40% of American children are born into the world without a father. And how many more without a mother committed to their raising? Added to all of that, of course, are those who lose parents to prison or to divorce or death or mental illness or abandonment. And so there are just a huge number of children who desperately need mentors who will come in and teach and guide and love them. That's what our guests are trying to provide for tens of thousands of boys and girls, and they're going to tell us about their work today. And to be honest with our listeners, we have a motive. I'm not going to make any bones about it. We're going to try to touch the hearts of our listeners and invite those who sense the call of God to become a caring mentor of one of these or more than one of these lost and lonely kids. So with us in the studio today are the three men I was referring to. We'll start with Stu Epperson. He's a co-founder and chairman of the board of Salem Communications. He also serves on the board of directors of the Christian Association of Youth Mentoring, which we're going to talk a lot about today. And it's referred to as CAYM. Stu is married to his wife, Nancy, who's sitting beside Shirley over against the wall in the studio today. And they have three daughters and a son, all of them grown. And how many grandkids?
16
grandkids.
All above average.
That takes us back to like Wobegon, doesn't it? Didn't he say that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Also with us is our dear friend John Gibson. He is a successful businessman. He serves on the board of directors of Mentor Kids USA, which is rather relevant to today, I think. And of course, CAYM. He and his wife, Mary Lois, live in Sacramento, and these folks are absolutely the salt of the earth. John serves on the board of directors for Family Talk and has been such a friend and brother to me as I've tried to develop this ministry. And finally, Peter Vanacore is with us. He is the executive director of CAYM. Tell us again what that stands for.
The Christian Association of Youth Mentoring.
He was formerly a professor at Gordon College in Massachusetts, and he has a master's degree in social work from Fordham University, and he's been working with young people since the late 1970s. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, welcome to Family Talk. You heard my introduction. Peter, I'm going to ask you, you've been working with kids for a long, long time. What drives you? What brings you to this ministry?
I think, first of all, it's the call of God. When you read the scripture, you cannot deny, but God is calling us to reach kids who don't have a mom or a dad. You know, God says he's the father to the fatherless, a defender of widows. He's the one who is there, who his heart breaks for these children. And our hearts need to break in the same way. That's my first step in moving towards this ministry.
Stu, what motivates you?
Well, at first it was duty. A kid that came into our lives kind of inadvertently about 20 years ago, and he was a handful. But I got to know him not as a kid, not as a group, but as an individual, and I started feeling love toward him.
How old was he?
He was about 13.
You took in a 13-year-old for
yes.
whom you didn't have any responsibility.
None. But we took him in, and it was trouble at first and trouble through a lot of the time. But then we came to love him, and then we were, instead of duty, I have an obligation to help this kid. But then it became love, and it became a permanent love, and we still love him. And the end, after the bumpy road, turned out to be quite enjoyable. He's now a successful attorney in Orlando, Florida. So thank the Lord through God's help. And so when I look at a kid now, I realize this is an individual. Yeah. God created him for certain great things, but I would love to help him achieve those great things. And the important thing, I think, Dr. Dobson, is recognize them as unique individuals, and they all have dreams that are noble, okay? But they simply aren't going to meet them unless God intervenes through a mentor.
And he came to be seen by you as a son.
Yes, yes. I don't think I would have admitted that back then, but he was a son. He was a member of my family. Mm-hmm. And our kids embraced the idea, and they pitched in. And
what a noble thing to do, to devote your life to one of these kids who, without you, may well have been lost.
Well, I'll tell you what, there is a feeling that we had when we went to his graduation from law school. We just sat there, and we just had this glorious feeling from God. Yes, this is right. Now, I don't need publicity. I don't need recognition. I just need that feeling, okay? And we've had it on several others since then. And it is the ultimate feeling that God gives us in a sense that we're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. I was writing about that very thought not too long ago and trying to describe the moment when you feel like you made God smile. We can't earn our salvation. We understand that. But there are times when it's as if he says to you, I saw that.
Right.
You did well.
Yeah.
I saw that. Uh-huh. And you were kind to that widow, or you reached out to a little boy or a little girl, or you helped somebody financially that wasn't making it. And nobody knew it, and you didn't do it for credit. But the Lord just says, it was good.
I think the thing I've learned, if you feel a duty to do something that is good for a child, and we'll use a child now, if you'll start down that road, God will give you the passion and the love for that individual that'll keep you going.
Even when he's 13.
That's right.
John, how about you? When did you begin to realize this is something the Lord wanted you to do?
Well, it started in prison work. I was working with Chuck Colson in several prison projects, and I started looking for a common denominator. Why are all these men in prison? And there is one single common denominator. Just about every one of them either did not have a father involved or a father that caused problems instead of helping. So we started saying, what can we do to shortcut that? And frankly, through God incidences, there are no coincidences, I got involved with the program in Phoenix. And I had the same issue about duty versus passion. I felt a duty to get involved, and I kept saying, Lord, I feel the duty, but I don't have a passion for this. I was placed in a room with some ladies who worked to coordinate between mentors and the kids. And one of the ladies said, I have two young girls that I'd like to get a mentor for, but I can't. And the reason I can't is because the men involved in their lives know they would go to prison if somebody found out what they were doing to those girls. Mm. And I said, God, you've got my heart.
Mm.
And that goes on all over this nation. We've got kids that simply are being ravaged because there's nobody there to stand in the gap. And James 1:27 says it clearly. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows. And these kids don't have the common name we think of the orphans, but when there is not a parent, a dad there in the picture, they are orphans, and it's ravaging our society and destroying the very fabric of our nation.
Peter, what do you feel when you see one of these kids who is lost, completely lost, maybe involved in a gang, just reaching out to men that he doesn't even know? He's a sitting duck for abuse. That often happens. And we've seen evidences of that just recently. And what does that do to you when you see it?
Well, these youth are so vulnerable. And I remember a young boy I matched. He was 12 years old on Long Island in New York. And he was heading for trouble very quickly. And this principal of the school called me and said, would you find a mentor for him? And I did find this mentor who was great, just met with him every week. But he told me the story of going to the beach on Long Island one day. And he hadn't seen his father in about 7 or 8 years. And he's at the beach and he sees his dad. And he just runs up to him and he couldn't believe it. He was so excited. And then he realized his dad had been living back on Long Island for 4 years and never contacted him. And then the father said, oh, yeah, I'll come and see you now. We'll get together every week. And he never, ever contacted him again. And when I saw the look in his eye, I knew that there was a hurt in there that was so deep that nothing could really make up for it. But a mentor, like the young man who mentored him, his name is Andrew, just came into his life and just met with him every week, just did simple things that a dad should be doing with him. But it brought hope into that young man's life. And 17 years later, I went to that young man's wedding, and his mentor was in the wedding party.
Oh.
And and they still keep in contact now. It's 22 years later, but it's beautiful.
Is it difficult to get men to mentor boys?
It's not if you approach men correctly. Part of the problem is we treat men often in the church like we treat women. I don't want to say that disparagingly, but we don't hit what motivates men to move on. Men want to do activities with kids. Mm-hmm. If you told a man, why don't you have a relationship with this young boy? That's not going to motivate a man.
Yeah.
If you say, why don't you toss a football with this young boy? That motivates them. And if you tell them that they can teach a kid to do things or they can just hang out and do some fun things together, that motivates men. And then if you tell them they will build a legacy through this, and men really want to build a legacy in their lives. And even when they're younger, they're looking at and saying, you know, what am I going to do to make a difference in this world? And so we have to motivate men in ways that say, you're going to make a difference. You're going to leave a legacy. You're going to leave a legacy for God. You're going to leave a legacy for your own name as you go by and helping a young man make it through some tough periods in his life.
Have you ever had a man say to you when you have asked him if he would be a mentor, I don't even know what I would say to him. I'm scared. I don't understand boys very well, and I'm not sure I can communicate with them, and they just are fearful. You hear that?
All the time, and it's not even just older men. It's guys in their 20s. Mm. Something happens when you hit 22, 23, and you forget what it's like to be a 14-year-old. The way I explain it to a lot of our mentors is, you know, a 55-year-old doesn't look at a 45-year-old and say, oh, how immature that person's acting. But a 20-year-old will look at a 15-year-old and just think, boy, that kid's in a different world. There's something that happens in those years that changes our perspective. And so it scares men to have to go
but
back into that world.
But you can get them over that hurdle.
We can definitely get them over that hurdle. And we do that by doing great training for them and support. Everyone who becomes a mentor has a coach. And the coach helps them through the relationship. The training gives them ideas of what they can do. So instead of that fear of what am I going to say with a young boy, we say, you don't have to say a thing. Just get a baseball, get a mitt, throw the ball, hang out with them, and the conversation will come naturally.
Hmm. Ryan and Luann, when Peter mentioned men being uncomfortable in church, does that remind you of anything?
David Murrow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a very good program on that whole concept there.
Yeah, and in fact, that I think it was two or three programs we did entitled Why Men Don't Like to Go to Church.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because church is really geared more for women than it is for men frequently.
When we train our the leaders in churches and other ministries to develop a new mentoring ministry, we say, how do you get to a man's heart? Well, your mother taught you that the way to the man's heart is through his stomach. But in mentoring, the way to a man's heart is through his feet. And it's this. If you get him active, his heart will follow.
Mm.
You have to get him doing something with the kid. And through that, there's a bond that develops that not only changes that young man, but changes the mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Young men become better fathers because they have had a mentoring experience. And older men can really learn to reinvest in a lot of different areas of their lives by building a vital relationship with a young man.
We have found, Nancy and I, that if we kind of do what we normally do, but include a kid, they love that. And you talk and you talk and you talk. And I was surprised to find that most of these kids have never interacted with an adult on a meaningful level, particularly a man. They just aren't there to talk with. There's usually no uncles, no sometimes there's a grandfather who they seldom see, but just to talk with. We would invite a kid over, say, could you help me in the yard a little while on Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
After 2 hours working in the yard, I knew everything about that kid.
Mm-hmm.
I knew his dreams. I knew what he wanted to do. And then I was at the point I could regard him as a unique individual, and I had a place in my heart for him. Now he's crossed my path, and it is through love primarily. I'm in a position to help him realize that dream. And the dreams are always great, you know. They're never, I want to be a drug dealer, or I want to go to prison or anything like that. Yeah. We might drive by a roof to get all those kids, you know. But they want to be great. They want to be successful, educated, and it's noble. But, boy, too often they meet that wrong person in their life who has a big car or something who's cool. And they go the other direction.
And they need another paradigm. And that paradigm, one of the beauties, too, is that we can have the mentor be with, if it's a boy, be with the guy, and then see an interaction between the mentor and the wife, something they've never experienced before.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And these girls, boys, when they see a couple together, suddenly learn how you're to react towards the opposite sex, with respect, with dignity. And they've never experienced that before. And that is something they then can copy and relate to.
The Family Research Council has a new study out by Pat Fagan talking about marriage. And it says, America has become a culture of rejection because parents are rejecting each other. And they're saying now that only 47% of kids will reach age 17 in an intact home.
Wow.
47%. Every other one of them will be in a single-parent home, and everything else changes from there. Uh-huh. Your idea of a contract and a bond and a commitment is gone because of that divorce and because the homes are broken or they never grew up with a father. They've got no one to look to, and we wonder why our marriage rate falls further and further and further. Who are they looking to?
Hmm. Hey, you know, that's disgraceful.
It is.
For our country. Yeah. Now, that is disgraceful.
You know, we were at the doctor the other day, and we're in the waiting room, and across from us is a little girl who's pregnant, and she couldn't have been 17. And she's got a mom who isn't much older than she is. And I just think it's going to continue. How are you going to teach this brand new baby, don't get pregnant when you're 14? Who's going to show them that?
You talk about a tragedy. Right now in the news, there is this story of a child who's 12 years old who has murdered his little brother. And they're getting ready to try him as an adult, and he could spend the rest of his life in prison. And then the word came out as to what his experience had been. His mother was a 12-year-old who was pregnant. And you can imagine what he has gone through. Now he killed his little brother, and we're going to put him in prison. I mean, that puts a big lump in my throat.
Christian mentor can step into that family, could have stepped into that family, gotten acquainted with those people, been regarded as a surrogate father, and have made a huge difference, okay?
Who provides the training?
Well, the Christian Association of Youth Mentoring. Now that you mention it.
You like the question.
The Christian Association of Youth Mentoring trains and supports churches and nonprofit ministries in developing safe and effective mentoring with our fatherless and motherless youth. Mm.
Given the child abuse that's going on out there today, the emphasis on safe there has real significance, more so than 20 years ago.
Yes, I was just meeting with a denominational leader, and he wants to develop mentoring in all his churches. But at the end of the conversation, he looked at me and he said, "What about Penn State?" And basically, I could look at him with great confidence and say, we follow the best practices of safe and effective mentoring that have proven to be not only effective in keeping out bad people who will harm kids, but will make sure that the mentors who are good do a great job. And so we concentrate on teaching how to recruit, screen, train, supervise, and evaluate mentors. It is mostly a lot of lay people that do this, but they do it in a professional way because we provide the training, the materials, and support to make it happen.
And with CAYM, you've never had an incident like this at all because of the training and the background check. You have about 5,000 kids being mentored now involved with CAYM.org. And there is a way to do this. One of the downsides that I really worry about, Penn State, Syracuse, could result in a lot of kids not having mentors because who would otherwise have mentors.
Think about the ripple effect. You said 5,000 kids are being mentored. I mean, they can change that pattern. They can then have healthy families where they're treating their kids right. And that ripple effect, I mean, you really can affect thousands and tens of thousands and then hundreds of thousands of people if you can get them in that program.
Ryan, you just hit the key. We have a bold dream at CAYM.org, and that bold dream is that every kid in America could have a Christian man or woman that puts their arm around them and helps them. And right now, I really believe, Doctor, that we have women who are concerned about their children. We have grandparents who are concerned about their grandkids and what will happen. And I want to give them a sense of hope. Go to CAYM.org and then go to your church and start spreading the word and encouraging people that there is an answer and that, in fact, they can get involved. And you who are listening right now can be the voice that encourages members of your own church to realize how many of these kids are hurting. And when you're sitting in your congregation this weekend, look around and you will see right in your own congregation several of those kids who need that help. And you can be the catalyst that tells the story, gets people working together, and forms that mentoring organization right in your own church.
Well, we're going to provide information as to how they can become involved before we're through here. But this is good stuff. Would you all do another program with us and let's finish this?
Thank you. We'd love to.
That would be great.
It would be our honor, Doctor. Thanks.
Well, all of you flew a long ways to be here with us today, and I thank you. And we're just going to continue talking to you right here. We will do part two of this very important discussion next time. Thanks again for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks. You, Doctor.
And again, all of that information about how you can get involved in mentoring or even start a ministry of your own in your area is at familytalk.org. If you prefer to give us a call for that information, here's the phone number, 877-732-6825.
And if you'd like a complimentary CD of this program to share with a friend who could use the information, you can also request that at familytalk.org, or once again, our number, 877-732-6825.
Thanks again to our guests and to you for spending this time with us today. We'll see you right back here tomorrow for more on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.